Welcome to the Deuce Podcast. I'm Brad.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we are doing our Loose Deuce series, Jeremy.
Yes, part two of two.
What's a Loose Deuce?
A Loose Deuce is it's a movie that it's not exactly... Well, a Loose Deuce is what I have after eating curry. But the...
There's nothing loose about that.
No, Loose Deuce is a movie... That it is a sequel of some kind, the second in the series, but it isn't actually the number two sequel.
It's not
titled
it's not
that
quite
way.
A sequel.
Yeah, and so we wanted to explore those occasionally. So this go round, we're doing spiritual sequels, but look for in the future for us to do things like sidequels and prequels,
spinoffs,
unofficial sequels.
Isn't that what this is?
No, not really. Unofficial sequels are sequels that still continue the story.
Oh.
But they're not by the same company putting out, as an example,
Return to Oz. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. This is episode 49 of The Deuce.
Episode 49.
49 of Loose Deuce. We're getting up there.
Yeah,
we're
getting up there.
Almost to our one year. But we are doing The Loose Deuce. Everybody wants some.
Everybody wants some.
Two exclamation points.
Yes, two exclamations.
Not one, two. To make everybody want some. It is the Loose Deuce, or the spiritual sequel to...
Dazed and Confused. Richard Linklater movie, and he himself said this was a spiritual sequel.
Yeah, so it's coming from the director.
I think that if he would have done this sooner, like if he would have done this years ago, it would have probably been the actual sequel. But he never really pursued
it. The man was too busy doing Boyhood, filming Boyhood for 10 years, okay?
He's also said, and this is strange to me, he's also said this is a spiritual sequel to Boyhood because it continues the story of a kid who's grown up, he goes off to college, and meets a new group of friends and, like, finds a new girlfriend. That doesn't really make sense, but that's pretty tenuous because this movie is actually set in August of 1980.
Yeah.
So clearly not the same timeline.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
What he
so we're just going to go with Dazed and Confused.
We're going to go for Dazed because I think he's Dazed and Confused on that one.
Well, that fits timeline better. 70s.
Well, look, there's like with him and like even Tarantino, he has movies where. You can almost say that they are part of an own universe themselves.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, whatever. To each his own. But this is a spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused.
Yes.
Yes. So, before we talk about that, I think we should take a break, shall we? So, after these messages, we'll be right back.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hi, my name's Jeremy. I've listened to podcasts for years. I've always had questions about my favorite shows or for my favorite hosts. I started a Facebook group called Podcasts We Listen To. It's a place where listeners can talk about their favorite shows and find new favorites. It's a place where podcasters can get tips on improving their shows, share their shows, and find new audiences. It's a place for all things and all genres of podcasts. That group has taught me that we all have questions about our favorite hosts, and now that group has become a show called Podcasts We Listen To. You can join me every Wednesday as I sit down with your favorite podcast hosts. You can get in questions for hosts by emailing them to podswelistento@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at podcastswlt. And of course, you can join the Facebook group as well. I'd love for you to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your favorite shows. See you next Wednesday.
And we're back.
We're back.
Wow. Please go check them out.
Please check that out.
Yes.
But we are currently doing episode 49 of The Loose Deuce.
Part two of two.
Everybody wants some two exclamation points. Two.
How do you know that everybody wants
Linklater was all like, I'm going to put two on there.
Yeah, I don't know what the choice was in the two exclamations.
No choice.
Two exclamations is awkward to me because, like, one is
Boyhood was supposed to be Boyhood, and he just didn't like that, so he took that and put it.
He just puts really tenuous punctuation at the end of everything.
Yeah, Bernie. Slacker? I don't know.
Yeah.
I keep going.
So, yeah.
School of Rock?
So the two exclamations with, I don't know, it's weird. Like, you expect three sort of or weird. You expect one. Two is...
I'm not expecting any, but I'm glad he gave us one, at least.
I'm wondering if it's like a kind of a Texas thing.
I don't know.
Because that was, I had a friend, Justin, who went to Texas, who moved down to Austin, and he used to, like, he'd be like, that's hot. H-O-T-T and two exclamations every time.
Was it two exclamations?
Two.
I don't know. It yeah. probably is.
It made me wonder.
Everything's bigger in Texas.
So you need two instead of
one. So you need two, I think, yeah. So, surprising enough, this movie is set in Texas. Very surprising for yep. a Richard Linklater movie.
Surprise.
He never sets anything in Texas.
Never.
Never. Mostly Europe with the before movies. Anyway, go ahead.
So this is, it takes place in South, at the fictional Southeast Texas University.
STU.
Yep. Go Cherokees.
Go Cherokees. Yeah, and as opposed to like, Dazed and Confused, which was the last day of summer, or the last day of school, the first day of summer. This is almost like the last days of summer and the yep. first day of college.
Correct.
So I like that bookend. I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
So that's a nice, interesting aspect. Yeah, and it kind of has the same narrative in a way, where it's just kind of, you know... There's not really much going on.
It's just kind of a slice of life.
Yeah.
And he, with a lot of Richard Linklater stuff, it's like you get a lot of slice of life, and then part of the way through, you rest. And when you rest, you get introspective.
Yeah, yeah, kind of. So this is going to be kind of interesting to talk about plot, because there isn't
really yeah, there's a not lot a whole going long. On. I'll try to run through it, and it shouldn't take too long.
Okay. So let's get to it. Let's drop the deuce on right. Everybody wants some. Two exclamation like, points.
That's, why did you say it with that upward lilt? Like that's because a question it's mark.
The they're pretty tight to the
everybody sum wants some.
Okay, let's go. All
right. So it takes
some.
Place. What? It takes place in Texas, of course. Right at, I think it's like August of 1980.
It's August 20... Something. It's yeah. around 3 days. It's a span of 3 days. Yeah. Linklater likes to do time frames where it's either like 1 day or mm-hmm. 10 years like Boyhood or 3 days here.
He likes to play with our perceptions of time a lot.
Right, and he likes to like just take a slice out of that. So mm-hmm. it's like August 28th or something
yeah.
to like September 1st. Like,
yes.
The first 3 days leading up to the first day of
and it gives college. You a, it gives you a countdown timer throughout yeah. it too, like it'll say like 1 day and 18 hours till first yeah. class. But we meet Jake. So Jake is driving into town in his car. He's listening to music.
Sweet ride.
He's got a crate full of records, in his back seat
yeah.
and like a turntable.
Yeah, looks like he listens to Devo. I think I saw Devo.
He had all sorts of stuff in there. Yeah. When they were kind of flipping through, you see a whole bunch. So he is, of course, played by Blake Jenner.
And who, if you know Grease Live.
Yeah.
He was the main, he was Danny Zuko, right, in Grease Live?
I don't
or was
know
he Kaneki?
I don't know about that.
He was in Grease Live.
He was in Grease Live. But he is going to Southeast Texas University. He's going to be a pitcher for their baseball team.
Sure.
He was like a big pitcher for his school, and now he got a scholarship, so he's going to be attending here.
Mm-hmm.
So he moves into, there are these like two houses that are the baseball houses.
Right. I went to a very small school which had a lot of houses outside of the campus. There was always a house known as the baseball house. And you knew that that's where the baseball players lived.
Mm-hmm.
So they're known as the two baseball houses on campus.
Yeah. And they're right next
to each other. Or off campus.
Yeah. They're right next to each other. They're yeah. on the edge. And He brings his stuff into the house, and as he's coming inside, he sees like another player who kind of disregards him. Then he comes inside and he sees this hose, and
there's no women in there. Oh, a hose. Okay, gotcha.
And it's just dripping water.
They say hose before bros.
Like, he's like, okay, so he kind of follows the hose along, and he's in the kitchen, and pretty soon you see the ceiling in the kitchen, like, kind of buckle a little bit, which was scary a little bit. And so a couple guys run downstairs, and they say, man, I can't believe this house couldn't hold that. Well, they're trying to fill up a waterbed. And we go down there. I think that's when we meet Glenn McReynolds, who is our team captain.
Team captain.
Played by Tyler Hoechlin.
Uh-huh.
Hoechlin? Again, sure. I don't know how you pronounce it. But he was, for those of you who watch the Arrowverse shows on the CW, he is Superman.
He was Superman for a couple
on,
episodes.
On the Supergirl. Hopefully
he comes back.
I hope so, too.
I like him as Superman.
He was pretty good.
He's sporting a stash in here. Yes, he a lot of people are sporting or trying to sport mustaches.
Yes, trying to.
A la Magnum P.I.
Yes. Now, if you don't know him from the Arrowverse, you might know him as the boy from... Road to Perdition. Tom Hanks' son in that movie.
That's a comic book too. But
yes.
Who did that comic book? Do you know?
Oh God, I can't remember who it was.
Doesn't matter.
Which floored me because I was looking up what else has he been in and saw that, and I feel incredibly old now. And I believe that's when he met Coma, Forrest Vickery.
I think so. Look, yeah. After a while, these baseball players...
The names, look, I get lost.
I was friends with baseball players in college. They all look the same after a while. They smell the same. They sound the same. They look the same. Nice guys.
Yeah.
But they just all look the same. And so this movie was really confusing for me.
I like that it didn't... Yes, we had people who were kind of... Like, they didn't have as prominent of a part. But there was nobody who was really just the background unnamed baseball
player.
I'll
give you that. Yeah.
Like, because sometimes you get that where they're like, hey, here's eight of us. Now here's four more who we don't hardly learn their names and they don't do anything.
We won't really get to know them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that happened, like, in The Sandlot, too. That happened a lot. But in this one, everybody plays a part, whether it's bigger or smaller. But they still talk. We know their names, all that stuff. Now, while they take Jake upstairs to meet everybody else, and he meets his roommate, Billy Autry, who's played by Will Britton. But a lot of times they just call him. They gave him a new name because he has this really thick Southern accent. and so they call him Buter Perkins.
Did I say, like, this is like he sounds like Matthew McConaughey Light.
Yeah.
Or Sam Rockwell.
I thought he sounded like Sam Rockwell.
Light.
Yeah.
So, you know, like... He's trying to do an impression of it,
yeah,
in a way, but not really.
Sam Rock Rare. He's not well done yet.
Sure.
Anyway, so, but yeah, he sounds like McConaughey Light.
Yeah, kind of.
But he is so. He, of course, he doesn't really take to that nickname. But everybody points out, you know, hey, he's got this girlfriend.
Yeah.
Follow the phone cord. He's been on the phone with her the whole time he's been here so far. Which can't be that long, but he's got the phone and he's just talking away. We also meet Finnegan,
Finnegan,
which is my favorite character in this movie.
Oh, by far favorite character. Yeah.
Played by Glenn Powell from Scream Queens and Hidden Figures.
Uh-huh.
This guy I think is a great actor, and I was glad to see him in this. Roper, played by Ryan Guzman. Dale, played by J. Quentin Johnson, and Plummer, played by Temple Baker, who've all been in things. They're younger
been in
actors.
Small things. They're young
actors. They're younger actors who are kind of coming into their own. I think the next biggest one outside of Glenn Powell was Ryan Guzman was in the reboot of Heroes. He played the guy who basically made his own superpowers up. Like he wasn't actually a metahuman. He was
okay.
So. Finn, Roper, Dale, Plummer, they all grab Jake and they're going to go cruising around just to go meet some of the ladies on campus. Mm-hmm. So they're driving around and they're talking. And of course, they're inviting girls to come to this party and basically saying, yeah, hey, we're the baseball players. You know, come to this party tonight.
Are they singing Grandmaster Flash?
They are. Oh, my God. Yes. They do a whole like they do the Grandmaster Flash.
This is a great scene.
Yeah.
And by the way, can I say that? Thank you for having a movie with an African-American actor and character that they don't constantly go to a stereotype joke.
Yes.
That he's just one of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes. And they're all rapping, they're all singing, and they're having fun, and they're not doing it like in this derogatory way or anything like that. They're just having fun, like they're enjoying the music. So they're cruising around campus, and they finally run into these two women, who, when they go to stop and talk to her, they kind of blow them off, and they say, "Meh, like I'm not interested." And so the Roper strikes out. So they turn around, come at it from the other direction, and Finn tries, because Finn is the more well-spoken,
right?
He's the ladies' man, but he's also kind of the intellectual,
right?
Of the group, he's fun. And so he's just talking to them, and they still are kind of not giving him the time of day. But the one girl, Beverly, she says, I like the quiet one in the back seat, pointing to Jake. And so, of course, they drive away and go, of course, that explains it. They're lesbians. But Jake is like, hey, stop. Like, I want to see which room she goes into so I know how to get a hold of her. Because I'd like to call her. And so, of course, they back it up and they show where they see where she lives and then drive off. Now, from there, they head back to the house and they have a team meeting. And, of course, the coach, he tells them, gives them a few rules. First, no drinking, which they've all been violating.
Right.
And continue to violate through the entire movie.
I mean, that's college.
Yeah.
And then, people give you rules that you aren't going to follow.
Yeah.
And part of, like, those people that give the rules know that that's probably going to happen. I mean, come on.
Yeah. And he tells them even, we know we can't stop you from drinking in town.
Right.
But you're not supposed to drink here in the house.
Correct.
And then they also say no women upstairs. Like, nobody on above the first floor. No women above the first floor. So, which, again, they will break. But they the coach introduces them to the new players. So, Jake, Plummer, who we've already met, Buter, Brumley, who is this kind of naive, sweet kid, who has this weird, like, catfish stash he's trying to grow. Like, he's trying to bond.
Right.
And he's trying to grow it in. Played by Tanner Kalina.
Yes, no relation to you.
No relation to me. But he does grow the same kind of mustache.
Ain't that the truth?
Oh. And then all of those four, or those four freshmen, they also have two transfer students.
Right, they were nearly freshmen. Right.
Yes, they were merely freshmen.
Yeah.
Jay Niles, played by Justin Street. Jay Niles.
That's a fake name. Justin Street?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
For real?
Yeah.
Who is he?
Justin Street.
No, but who's the character?
Jay Niles.
Oh, Jay Niles. Okay. Yeah.
He was recruited for his professional level pitching. He supposedly has like a 95 mile an hour fastball.
Right.
And so he's a transfer, but he's also kind of crazy. They've pointed out already. He was the guy we first saw.
Annoying character, but probably fun to play.
Yeah.
Am I right on that?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he also has good redemption kind of a piece. Eh. A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Raw Dog.
Yeah, he calls himself Raw Dog.
Right.
Nobody else calls him.
As he drinks screwdrivers. I don't know anyone who drinks screwdrivers in college. It was beer.
Yeah.
And vodka.
Yeah.
Well, screwdrivers, but yeah, whatever.
And my dad used to drink fuzzy navels.
In college?
When he was like in his early 20s.
Oh.
Because I remember, like, my parents both loved to drink fuzzy navels.
I don't even know where to start with that.
The old Futurama quote with, I'll take one of the girliest drinks on the house, and I'll have a fuzzy navel.
And I'll have a fuzzy
navel. Two fuzzy navels coming right up. So he's the, Jay Niles is a transfer, along with Willoughby, played by, who's again. a fun character, played by Deuce alum Wyatt Russell.
Wyatt Russell.
We lost some in Goon, Last of the Enforcers.
Goon, Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn's kid.
Their son, yep. Who's kind of this bearded philosopher stoner guy.
Yeah.
And can I say, like, there's no character in here that I really dislike out of everybody we've
met. There's no character I dislike, but there's no character I really am like with Dazed and Confused, where I'm like, oh, you're like, I adore you.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of people, like, I don't really hate anybody, but nobody, I don't latch onto a character and say, that's me. Or that's somebody I, like, easily identify with.
Right. Yeah. I think the closest would be Jake that you could probably identify with.
Yeah.
But...
And I get, like, a kind of Brumley.
Maybe.
Yeah. I think it just depends. But no. It's, so we're meeting all the characters.
You can,
it's a fun...
You know, like, I feel like you know some of these characters. Like, you know someone. You know a Finnegan.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You know these characters.
Yes. And the other thing with this is they're all like, they seem like they'd all be fun characters to play.
Right.
Anyway, so the coach tells them their rules. But the team disregards all this and they're hosting that party that they were talking about.
Right.
So it is just crazy. Or they're going to be hosting the party after they go out. So... They actually go out to the sound machine.
Sound machine.
Which is a discotheque.
Yes.
And
I told you it's like a weird time for music. If it's a Linklater movie, there's going to be music plays another character in the movie.
It does.
It always does. And this is a movie that does the same thing. So it's a weird time for music. There's a lot of disco in this time left over. Yeah. 79, 80, a lot of punk, the weird country crossover, Van Halen, kind of that rock that you have
some
there.
Kind of like the early days of hip-hop.
Yeah, early days of hip-hop before we get New Wave.
Yes.
Like, it's the right before that cusp of New Wave.
Yeah.
So it's very odd and very melting potty.
But you know what?
This movie explores that so well.
Yes, it does. And the music, actually, I think it just adds the element. Like, sometimes you get it where, like, it has one kind of music throughout the entire soundtrack.
Uh-huh.
And this, it makes it, even though it's supposed to take place over a few days, it makes it feel, like, so much longer because you have such a variety, because so much is going on with that.
Yeah, but that didn't seem, it didn't feel schizophrenic. It still felt like these movies were college, or not this music, the music was, like, college music. That,
yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's stuff, a lot of it, even now, that I'm like, yeah, okay, like, if I heard that on the radio, it would still make me happy. It's not like the watered-down things you hear all the time. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah. So so they go to the sound wave. They start meeting girls. They start dancing with them, having a good time, and they end up bringing them back home. And so they're partying there, obviously drinking, partying at the house. Then they realize that because there's a room set up, because they're not supposed to have women above the first floor. So there's a room set up to go sleep with the women. And Finn is already in there. Of course, Finn, the ladies' man, is already in there. So a couple of the other guys, Nez and I can't remember, I think it's like Quentin, they just take girls upstairs. So Jake says, okay, hold on. So he goes upstairs to see if his room is free. And Buter's in there.
Right.
And he tells
He's drinking with a bunch of hicks.
Yeah, with other country guys. Yeah. And they've been to the, what do they call it, the Wholesome, it's something like the Wholesome Bar or Wholesome DJ or something like that. Sure. But it's a country bar. They've been there. And Buter, he's kind of pissy. He's like, oh, you guys aren't supposed to have girls up here. And he's like, I know that, but can you be cool? Because I kind of want to take this girl up here. And Buter's not leaving the room. And he says, look, how's that fair to me? My girlfriend lives far away. Like, what am I supposed to do? He's like, sorry, then go to school closer to her. And but Buter won't leave. So instead, they go out and have sex in his car.
My last year in college?
Yeah.
I had a roommate that I only saw 3 times.
Yeah.
He was never there. He was always, I saw him on the campus more than when I saw him in our dorm room.
Yeah.
He always lived with his girlfriend.
Oh, wow.
I was in cooking something. All of a sudden, the door opens and I'm freaked out.
Yeah.
This has been like a month and he's not shown up.
Yeah.
It was very odd. But every time he saw me on campus, he was like, hey. Very nice. Odd.
See, I lived in a fraternity. And so it reminds, like, that's probably the thing I associate with the most in right. this movie is the kind of hijinks
the
in there.
The jackassery.
We didn't really drink in the house because we didn't want to, like, mess that up. But we had, like, a off-campus party house.
Right.
But the whole, like, girls going upstairs and the, you know, people just kind of having shenanigans and... you know, regular college stuff.
Right.
Like, that's... I was kind of like, yeah, all right, I get mm-hmm. it. Anyway, they all... And we see lots of the people getting lucky. Like, they all go through that. Interestingly enough, and I read this earlier, then, like, Finn is laying there with this lady after they get done having sex, and he goes, I really think that... Who'd he say the... I can't remember who he said. He calls out the team's going to go to the World Series, and they actually did that year.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. And so I think
the Astros. Was it the Astros?
It might have been the Astros.
Probably. I mean,
but Linklater, like, wrote that in.
Right.
Like, I don't know what the point of it was.
No, I think it's just his love is a love of baseball.
Probably. But, yeah, I was just like, huh, that's fun. All right. So the next day... Everybody's downstairs. Buter's coming down, and he has all his bags with him. And they're like, what are you doing? You leaving? What's going on? Well, he was talking with his girlfriend.
Right. His girlfriend might be pregnant.
Yeah. She says she's late. Oh, by one day.
Yeah.
So she thinks she might be pregnant. And, of course, they're young, so she's freaking out about whatever. And so they kind of laugh at him. They're like, it's one day, calm down. And Finn suggests that it's because she's trying to see how he reacts to it. And basically this is her exerting control over right. him and all this whatever. But he says, no, I want to be there with her. So he takes off. And they tell him, you still have to be back for practice because they have a mandatory voluntary practice on Sunday, the player-only practice. So later, the team goes out drinking and cruising for chicks again. So they go back to the sound machine. Finnegan, and we see him do this the day before, but he's doing it again. Finnegan has this bit where he talks about his average penis.
Sure.
It's average size. And he, like, goes on. And women weren't upset by it. They weren't whatever. They were, like, you know, they're tired of hearing men trying to brag and talk it up. So hearing him
this
talk...
This character could have been smarmy and slimy.
Yeah.
And he does not play it like that. Nope. And he doesn't write it like that either.
No. And I think part of that bravado and stuff like that, I don't think that... I think he himself almost... the character is trying to put on a character as well.
Yeah, I believe so.
Because there are some times when I think he is being very genuine about stuff, and he is a genuinely nice guy, I think, for the most part.
Oh, I agree.
So while they're there, Jay is with them this time.
Jay.
And he's Jay is with them. And he is like talking about how he's been recruited. Oh, I got recruited, but I told them no. I wanted to go back and get more college under my belt.
He said the Blue Jays.
Yeah, because he's from Michigan. He's from Detroit.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And so he said that the Blue Jays are trying to draft him, and they're like, did they now? And
with
he's
like, yep. Like these creepy like 80s glasses that he has on.
Yeah,
that look like kind of like. Unabomber glasses in a way?
Yeah, they're like those firing glass or like the shooting glasses, like Goodman has in the Big Lebowski.
Yeah,
anyway, but this kid, like, you can just tell like something's off with him. He's obviously lying about these things, and I don't know if it's just because he doesn't have friends or he just is trying to feel important or what the deal is. But he is just going nuts. And so then he's like, yeah, I'm gonna get a drink. So he goes over to the bar and he asks for a screwdriver, and he says, so they're making him a screwdriver, and one of the other guys is kind of giving him crap, but then he's like, yeah, I've been grinding on five ladies. And they're like, no, you haven't. You literally haven't. Like, you haven't done that. Oh, before
Again,
you got
though,
here.
I know people like that from college.
Yep.
Who did that. So, you know.
Before I was doing it before you got here.
Yeah.
And so he's acting up. Well, then he's like, the guy makes his screwdriver and puts a piece of lime in it. And he's already acting up, so I think the bartender's already annoyed. He puts the lime in it, and he starts going nuts about that. And he just starts, like, screaming and talking about how he's the raw dog and so on and so forth. Then he calls the bartender, who's Latino, calls him Pancho Villa. And then, like, starts talking shit and saying, you know, look at him. He's trying to give me this stare down. He's trying to do this and this. And
It's the 80s, so he's writing this with stuff that you would hear in the 80s.
Yeah.
They throw, you know, the derogatory word for a gay guy around a couple times. I mean, they do that. I mean, it's kind of the time. It sucks that has to be in there, but it is. There is an authenticness to it.
Well, when they do it, too, it's not, like, excessive. Like,
yeah,
he's
it's not
very
excessive.
Good about that.
Yeah, that's true.
But so he says that, and He's just like, look at him. He's trying to give me the stare down. He's trying to do this and this. And he turns around like he's some, you know, ooh, I scared everybody. They're going to back down. And when he turns around, the bartender jumps over and, like, puts him in, like, a chokehold and, like, tackles him to the ground. And they start fighting. And so then all the players come over and are trying to separate them. And they all end up getting kicked out of Sound Machine. And so they get kicked out. And so they're like, okay, well, what are we going to do? The night's still young.
Right.
And so they're like, well, let's go to the Western bar.
The country Western bar.
Yeah, that Buter went to.
Yeah.
And so let's go there. We'll just try to pick up a different kind of girl. And so they're going to go, but they forbid Jay from going with them.
Yeah.
And they're like, you've had enough for one night, raw dog. And so he's like, starts freaking out. And he's like, I'll run home. You'll see. I'll run home. And
whatever,
just starts like running off into the night.
So then they change into like
Western clothes. Yeah.
Clothes that they have, I guess.
They're in Texas.
Oh, that's true.
And I feel like some of them had it and some of them raided like Buter stuff, maybe.
Right. Maybe.
But they all go to. So they all head out to the club, and they have fun there.
Yeah, it's not like when they go to these different places, they have respect for it. Do you know what I mean? Through this movie, which I like, which almost brings in this inclusiveness that this baseball team has. in a weird way.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that more later.
And so they end their night on a high note.
Yeah.
They kind of salvage it. So the next day...
The Cotton Eye Joe scene was kind of weird to me.
Yeah.
Because they kept saying, what did they say, like bullshit or something like that?
Yeah.
I was like, when did they... Do I not know something about Cotton Eye Joe song? Were you supposed to say that?
It wasn't like the Jock Jam version of it.
Well, I know that, but what I'm saying is, like, are you supposed to say it's kind of like where's the salt? Like Margaritaville? Yeah. Like, where's the salt? Where's the goddamn salt?
I'm
like,
pretty sure there is.
Okay, there is.
Like it.
Evidently.
Yeah. So the next day at the house, Willoughby, who hasn't been really hanging out with them outside of the house. I think we saw him on the day of the party, and he was doing, like, naked Tai Chi for some weird reason.
I don't think he ever goes outside, except to ball practice.
Yeah, or, like, in the van in the back of the
place. Yeah.
So Willoughby shares his weed with the guys. They're getting high, and they're talking music and philosophy with the freshman. And he professes his love for, like, Pink Floyd. And, like, listen to this. He's, like, listening to the movements of the music.
Yeah.
While saying, hey, look, like, Van Halen, he says Van Halen's kind of watered down.
Of course you like Van Halen, because they're pushing that on you.
Yes. Which, there's an air of truth to that.
Right.
Doesn't mean that Van Halen's bad, just means, you know... Commercially, it was...
It's oversaturated. Yeah.
But it seems like classic Linklater, though.
Very much so.
The whole conversation that was happening was just classic. Classic what you would expect.
Yeah.
So later, the guys watch Nez and Brumley play Knuckles. Or what is it?
Yeah, where they just flick each other with the knuckles. Yeah,
until one of you gives up.
This is where Jake all of a sudden realizes that everything's a competition.
Yeah.
In this house.
Well, and Finn talks about that. Finn says everything in life, to some degree, is a competition. And that, you know, that's how we survive. That's how we get stronger. And he says competition reveals who we are. And, you know, here's Brumley, who usually is kind of the weak one. Well, he's got something to prove, so he's trying harder, and he's enduring. And we see Nez, who ends up backing off. Like, he backs away from it. Says he finally gives up because his knuckle is all swollen and red.
Right.
So he finally gives up. But it tells you who you are, or reveals who you are. It's like those who back down, those who quit... those who win with grace and those who don't. Like there was a scene earlier with table tennis between Jake and...
Can I tell you, this is where the movie starts to pick up for me.
Yeah.
During this scene. And then that's when I realize, okay, this isn't just about a bunch of dumb jocks being kind of jerks. Yeah. This movie is about something else.
Yes. I would agree. Actually, when they were sitting and listening to music,
that's where we got the
tone kind of changes a little bit. And it's them talking about their beliefs and their thoughts,
and it becomes more of what we know of Linklater.
Yes, I agree. So they end up going to walk around, and Jake happens across a guy who used to be a teammate of his on the high school baseball team who is now living in this, like, punk house. And he's totally embraced this punk subculture. He, I guess, stumbled upon a punk bar and some girl, like, shaved his head or part of his hair, and he fell in love with the punk culture after that. And so he invites them to go to a punk concert. And Jake kind of encourages everybody. He says, come on, let's just go try it out.
At first, they're really hesitant.
Yeah, they're like, I don't know. So they all decide to go. And some of them are kind of dressed for the part, and some aren't. And obviously, they look like fake punks. They
look like posers.
They take their normal shirts, and obviously have just cut the sleeves off, and it's nice, clean cut, whatever. But they're having fun there at this concert, too.
Right. Again, they are not shitting upon something that someone likes.
Yeah.
Instead, they're going, oh, I can see why people like this. I can see, you know, hey, right now I'm living in the moment. Like, especially there's that scene with Jake and Finn where, where he says something about, well, this is what we're doing now and we're living in the moment.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of your definition of college anyway.
Yeah.
And so that's when this movie works for me in the aspect of that. Here's this baseball team, which is very sports jock.
Yeah.
And in high school, jocks ruled, right?
Yeah.
Now you're in college and you all have these blowhards come together. You know, these people who are very pig-headed. And now they're all trying to be the best that they could be. So I think it's almost like, especially with these baseball players, the inclusiveness of just kind of embracing what's around them instead of putting it down in Texas, of all places.
Well, okay, so...
In 1980 is a very wonderful thing to see. Yeah. You know, it's not like, oh, kumbaya, but you know what I mean.
Well, Jake approaches this. So they're at the punk venue. The team has gone into like the pit and are all just moshing around.
Right.
And he says, Jake says, you know, this is the third identity we've had in three days, or like less than 3 days. We've been, you know, in the disco, we've been in the country western. We had a country western persona. Now we have this punk persona.
But think about
he says, we're phonies. And Finn says, to your point, Finn says, no. He goes, because we are people who, he goes, our objective is to enjoy life, to get laid, to do these things.
Right.
And everything that we are doing and these things that we're enjoying are in service to that.
Right.
So as long as you're staying true to what your goal is, you're not being fake when you do all this other stuff. Right.
And I feel like knowing the movies of Linklater, it so is like you seeing interviews with him, you can see that he has been influenced by punk. He's been influenced by country. He's been influenced by disco. He's been influenced by the 70s. He's been influenced by art and culture and mythology. He's been influenced by all of this that I think at that moment I kind of understand Linklater a little bit more. I feel like it's so autobiographical. I can't talk. That like Finn, there is a Finn that he knows that told him that, and he went, boom, light bulb went on.
Yeah.
This is who I am.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I feel like he didn't fit really in, really, with not necessarily the jocks themselves, but he did. Yeah. You know what I mean? And now you're, oh, no, we're being posers. But no, we're not being posers. So it's a good scene.
Yes, very good. So the next day.
Sorry, I was rambling.
No, you didn't ramble. You're fine. Jake thinks about them talking about being true to what your goals are, right?
Yeah.
Or like what you want out of life. So Jake goes to that girl Beverly's house and leaves flowers on her door, like tapes them to her door with a note, and then goes off to have the frat party at the baseball house.
I even enjoyed Beverly.
Yeah.
I felt like you're not a stereotypical.
When she first showed up, I was like, meh.
Yeah.
But like when she then is being a person, I was like, oh, all right. But so at this house, I mean, they're having a crazy party. And like they invited, the fun thing is they invite people from the country venue and from the punks. They invite the disco
That's
people.
That's what I mean.
It's this huge house of all these people who are there, they've been sharing this time with. Mm-hmm. But they have like
the exploration of college in this kind of
they have by
one
the way,
setting
beer bong through a wiffle bat.
Yeah.
Seems amazing.
Sure.
Beer bong through a wiffle bat. They're mattress surfing down the stairs. Willoughby's teaching them how to make hash brownies. And, like, they're mud wrestling. Dez is mud wrestling some lady outside.
Sure.
All, you know, the usual kind of stuff. So
your usual Saturday night at a college.
So the next morning, Beverly calls calls for Jake. And she says, well, hey, you're the quiet guy from the car. And they kind of talk for a few. And she agrees to meet him to get together. So she's a performing arts major. And then he basically just says, well, I'm a baseball player. And that's kind of at the insistence of Finn. It's like when they meet, this is how he introduces himself. Because mm-hmm. Finn says, that's what the ladies are looking for. You can sum this all down. Like, you can say you're all these other things. But when you say baseball player, it's like you're saying you're a warrior. And women love that. And so he tells her that he's a baseball player. She does not seem cool with that. I think she's looking at it like, uh-oh, he's a dumb jock.
Oh, he's a dumb...
Yeah.
Prick of a jock.
Yeah, that's... I mean, you can see it on her face that she's like, uh-oh. But he said that, you know, it's not about... The dumb jock thing here is not the honesty of what's going on. He said, I was the hot shit person at my school. All these guys are right. Hot shit people at their schools. But when they come together, now it's, you're
just
all
like,
bottom
just
of
like
the barrel.
Like what I
again.
Said. Yeah. Where they all come together.
And so they have a lot of people who are overcompensating because they have a hard time dealing with
and
that.
And she says, that's the same way here.
Yep. Same way with the performing arts. And she talks about the school she came from and how, she was great there. But
movie,
everybody here is doing the same.
This movie celebrates differences by finding similarities.
Exactly.
And it doesn't beat you over the head with it.
Exactly.
I like that part of it. Having said that, it just doesn't resonate the hardness that it should in the same way of Dazed and Confused.
I would agree. Totally agree. So they talk and, they hit it off well. He says he has to go to practice, but she kind of throws out this idea of, coming to this party at a place called Oz, which is like the performing arts house off campus. And so he says, yeah, he'll think about it, but he'll probably go. And so he goes to practice, his first unofficial practice. They're all kind of doing their own thing. They're playing, they're testing out their limits, they're learning to work together. And then Jay starts pitching. Jay, who's always being aggressive and kind of overcompensating. This is a person, too. I think that's part of after the scene where he started kind of making stuff up. And then we talk about, these guys are overcompensating. They're having some hard times. And then we get Jake again. I went, oh, that's why he's doing this. Because that's probably all he has to hang his hat on. And... Now he's bottom of the barrel, so now he's really freaking out.
Yeah, he's freaking out.
And instead of just embracing that and being like, hey, my teammates won't judge me, he's like, no, I got to be that again. And so he's trying, and he's overcompensating and trying to be this alpha male that really he doesn't need to be.
Can I say this practice was kind of fun.
Yeah.
I didn't mind this practice scenes.
Yeah, it was nice to have some action in
kind
the movie,
of.
Too.
Yeah.
Which we hadn't had a whole lot of.
No.
Because it's more slice of life. Yeah. That. But so Jay, he's upsetting the team because it's supposed to be batting practice. So he's supposed to be lobbing softballs to them so that they can hit them. So he can practice batting. But he is throwing his 95 mile an hour pitches at him. And McReynolds, Glenn, he is like, you know what? Fine. So he comes up and goes to bat, and he ends up catching a piece of Jay's ball, knocks it out of the park. And, of course, which causes Jay to throw a tantrum, and he just kind of takes off. Now, all the time while this is happening, at one point, Willoughby was originally the one pitching. And the coach shows up and says, "Hey, Willoughby, I need to talk with you." And Willoughby just goes, and he kind of looks, you know what, he just looks upset. And he sets his ball down, or sets his glove and ball down on the mound.
But he knows what it is.
He knows what it is. But we don't know right. What's going on. It just seems odd for Willoughby. And he sets it down there, almost like this kind of goodbye moment. And he walks off to go talk to the coach. And that's when Jay comes up to pitch. Of course, Jay kicks his glove off the mound and is just acting like a jerk.
Yeah.
But and it ends up with Jay throwing a tantrum and walking away. Later, they reveal, like, after the... Well, during the practice, everybody's still going, and we see the coach shaking Willoughby's hand and Willoughby just walking away altogether. They practice. They're doing fine in the game. And then they say, wait, there's one last thing we have to do, freshman batting practice, which is, of course, Linklater had to work one of these in.
A hazing kind of
hazing thing. Yeah. And so they duct taped the four freshmen to the outfield fence and start just hitting baseballs at them.
Right.
I think they hit Plummer in the crotch one time.
Sure.
Yeah, they're all just hitting them. But... later on, when they're all getting lunch, the freshmen, at least, have all bonded together. And we know that the other ones have, too. But they've all started talking. Even Buter, who is now, he came back for practice.
Right.
On a side note, his girlfriend, not pregnant. So, she's not pregnant. So that, you know, worked out in his favor. But he, you know, they're all chummy now. And then Plummer shows up and says, oh my, Plummer and Dez show up and go, oh my God, Willoughby, he's like gone. Like he's out of the house and everything. And they said, well, what happened? What's going on? Turns out Willoughby was a 30-year-old guy and he kept faking transfers, moving from school to school just so he could keep playing baseball. And so... he left, he took all his stuff, but left a Pink Floyd album on the floor with a joint on top of it.
Kind of a weird kind of goodbye, but whatever.
Yeah. But yeah, so he's 30, and so he left. But you know what? Like, I wasn't upset by any of that.
Or no.
Like, that's weird. Like, I was just like, oh, okay.
Okay.
Because it was just somebody who, and they even talk about that when they leave. And like Finn, he's like, I'm not mad at the guy. He's like, he was just somebody who probably couldn't make it to the majors.
Yeah.
But he loved the game so much that what was his other option?
Yeah, again, not judging.
Yeah. He's like, what was his other option? He goes, I don't know what I would do.
Yeah.
And so he, you know, they're kind of like, yeah, okay, we get it. So later. Jake is getting ready to go to Oz, and all the other players they're hazing Brumley. They're playing a game they call O Canada, which they're basically is just them making up the rules as they go. But they are kind of like giving Jake crap about not being invited to this party,
right?
To this theater party. And so they eventually decide, hey, we're going to go. He invites them along. So they all go. It's this giant costume party, and it is, like, crazy there.
But again, when they enter it, they don't go, what the fuck is this?
I was kind of like, oh, shit. Because I thought this was going to be a scene where, like, everybody was acting like a bunch of assholes.
Right.
and thought, like trash and I stuff thought and that making
was
fun.
What it was going to be too.
No, they did not. They were very respectful, and even like Finn was like, "My God, look at this!" Because they had umbrellas like on the ceiling, so when the lights came through, right. They were all colored. And he was like, "Check this out."
But I'm going to be honest with you. Like when I was in college, the nicest sports people were the baseball people.
Yeah.
You know, and so I was like, and the people that were more open to maybe kind of talk to you about things that weren't sports were the baseball people. So there you go.
Yeah. And even though like they don't kind of, it's weird. They aren't like 100% fitting in with like, they don't know how to approach the artsy people necessarily, but they talk with them and they're getting better about it and like relating. And like at one point, there's a girl, Finn is talking to, this girl about his astrological charts, and all of a sudden they start giving him crap about that, and he's just like, "What the hell, man?" He's like, "That's what she was into, so that's what I'm talking to her about." Right. He's like, "If I only talked to women who are interested in baseball, I wouldn't be talking to anybody."
Right.
And then he points out this thing. He points out this thing about. He basically says. You guys, all you talk about at baseball practice and at the house is women. But then when you get around a bunch of women, all you're talking about is baseball. And they kind of give him crap for that. But then you can also kind of see that they're like, "Oh, God, yeah, we do." But Jake takes part. Jake joins Beverly and takes part in this improvisation. It's like Alice in Wonderland dating game.
Yeah.
And the baseball players, like, I thought, "Oh, God, they're going to, you know, give crap and all this." And, like, there was one point, like, the Red Queen was basically
a drag queen.
Yeah. And somebody goes, "Is the Red Queen a man?" And they're just kind of like,
That's the end of it.
Yeah, that was it. But I thought, oh, they're going to talk shit. They're going to act like a bunch of fools. But the only time they ever make a bunch of sound is when Jake comes up there. And their chickens are cheering on their friend. But most time they're just watching it. And you actually see Finn is just sitting there observing it. And this girl goes, "Hey, you're the feminist," or whatever that he said he was earlier. And she's like, "Well, you're not going to be doing this. You're not going to be acting like a fool." And he goes, "I am just, I'm a quiet kind of guy." Which then she wants to jump him because of it. But he and Beverly, Jake and Beverly, end up taking off. And they spend the night together. They go swimming. They do all this other stuff. But they end up spending the evening together. And then they head back to her room in the morning. Like early in the morning. Basically, she changes clothes. And he, you know, lays down for a few minutes before they have to get right back up and head to class. So at that point, the semester has started. They go from her dorm or apartment or whatever to class. The two of them head their separate ways, kind of share a kiss, and the guys give him some crap, but they go their separate ways. He runs into Plummer in class, and as they kind of settle in for their first lecture, now they've had this jam-packed weekend, so now they settle in for the part where they should be learning, and they, the professor writes, "Frontiers are where you find them," on the chalkboard, a very link ladder. Yeah. If it couldn't be more link ladder, if he just walked into the room and wrote it by himself and then walked out. But they write, "Frontiers are where you find them," on the chalkboard. And as their class officially begins, they fall asleep. The end.
The end. You've been deuced on Everybody Wants Some.
Yes. Two exclamation points.
Never figured out why, but that's okay. This is a fine movie. It starts off slow.
Yeah.
It picks up, and then you realize what this movie is going to be. It surprises me in that the fact that it's not your typical it is a college movie, but it becomes more than just that.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it,
I agree.
It deals with subjects it doesn't know it's dealing with. Do you know what I mean? Or it does, and it just sneaks up on you. It just doesn't have the same heart or punch that it's the first movie does. Do you know what I mean? Dazed and Confused, yeah.
But I think Dazed and Confused
became so popular.
I also think this goes to talk about Richard Linklater and where he is in his life.
I agree.
Because Agreed. I think when he was younger, he focused on more of that aspect of his adolescence. About the, hey, doing the crazy things and having fun. And he still kind of does that. But, like, think of how we reminisce about our college days between our 20s and our 30s. Even just in the reminiscing.
I agree.
You remember different aspects. And I think he's almost looking back at, like, this is no longer a story about, like, remember the crazy things I did. It's a story about, like, remember how I grew up.
This is a filmmaker who started off very independent, who found success in later on in bigger budget movies, and has grown in a storyteller and a director. So that's what we thought of it, but let's hear what other people thought of it, shall we?
Yes.
Bertrand Henry gives it a 3 out of 10, says, what was the point? Only one question mark. So good rating on IMDb. I was expecting something great, funny and all. What was that? It gets nowhere. Just a bunch of very cool guys that make you follow for 2 hours. Sometimes you find them attaching a bit funny, but they are pretty much all the same. The very cool guys from college who play very good baseball and who can have all the girls they want and who speak all the time in cool and smart ways. That's very little for a two-hour movie. I really don't know what the point of this is. Looks like a commercial for College Life or something. Not bad, but awfully flat. I don't think it's flat.
No. He says that like a person who didn't get to experience those things.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. So this is Tim Schreier, who gave it a 7 out of 10. Said, hated it at first glance. It grew on me while watching. I had great hopes for this, knowing Linklater's work. I had some great expectations always because I had anticipated seeing my college era and experience through his lens and view. It did not resonate, but I was very never part of fraternity or clique. What did sink in was where the movie turned for me, was the realization that this film was about discovery, about how this group of misfits are finding their own identity. Once I got over the jock talk and realized that fact, I started really liking this film. It was an interesting choice to select a group of baseball players to serve as a vehicle to discovery and identity. It turned out this film did, in fact, resonate with me. I was a loner in college who had many friends who belonged to various groups, never once considering myself part of any particular group. That diversity was one of the best values I got from my college experience. The quest for diversity was very well represented in this picture. That's a great review, and that's exactly what this movie was trying to say.
Well, and even when we got done watching it, because it didn't really resonate with me. I started to appreciate it more like when we started hitting the Linklater kind of moments. But when it was all done, like literally in the course of like the few minutes from when it was done until now, I remember thinking like the first thing I thought was like, well, that was a letdown. And then as I was sitting here, I'm like, no, wait. And I keep thinking, the more I digest it, the more I digest it, I'm like, wow, I really like this movie. It's almost like so much of a slow burn that it doesn't hit you until like after you're all done with
it. Correct. I agree. And the fact that, like, I think the first movie is so well-loved that you have so much fun watching it.
Yeah, but that movie's so much instant gratification, too.
But it's instant gratification. Yeah, correct. This, I think, resonates a little bit more in the fact that if you're going to talk about experiences and identity through... Because in high school, you are trying to find... how you fit in with other cliques.
Yeah.
in college, you're trying to find your identity, and how that will help in your future. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And in your experiences in college. I think this movie does a good job of it.
No,
it just uses the baseball aspect as a vehicle. Well,
It's just like it's just a vehicle it comes in.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Right?
Yeah.
So with that being said,
yeah.
Do you want to do the five questions?
Yes.
All right, let's do those. So now this is our special Loose Deuce questions, spiritual sequel edition.
Mm-hmm.
So first off, what was your favorite part of the movie?
I thought Finnegan was great.
Yeah.
I thought he, who's the actor that plays him? I can't remember.
Powell.
The guy Glenn from Powell. Hidden Figures and Glee. This, Glee. If more, or not Glee, sorry, Scream Queens.
Yes.
Which is just Glee Queens, whatever. Anyway.
Yeah. Murder Glee.
Murder Glee. I think if this movie, this should have been a star turning role for that guy.
Yeah,
like more people should have seen this movie and should have gone, that guy is going somewhere.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I don't think they did, which is a shame. So I think that's part of my first part of my movie. But I think the best part of the movie is the use of music and how it kind of mm-hmm. resonates through the college experience and how the different type. Well, when I was in college, I started listening to more folk and country and punk.
Yeah.
And then went, what the fuck am I? Do you know what I mean? So this movie speaks in that area, in that aspect. So I like the music. And then also, I was okay with a girl, Bethany. I thought she was adorable.
Beverly.
Beverly, sorry.
Yeah. You know, like, I love the performances by Glenn Powell and by Tyler Hoechlin, or Hoechlin, whatever.
Yeah.
I thought they both did really well, and I would hope to keep. I mean, obviously, we've seen them in more things now, but I'd hope to keep seeing them break out into other roles based off this. But I actually agree with you regarding the music,
yeah,
because it does play a big part. And so, when I was younger, was not allowed to listen to a lot of different kinds of music. I wasn't.
Right.
Like, I could listen to religious music, and I could listen to the oldies.
God.
And once I said, why can't I listen to pop music? It says the same things that the oldies say, and sometimes the oldies are worse. Like, listen to this. And I pointed out what the lyrics meant, which then lost me oldies, too. So
good job.
When I went to college, I remember I had a roommate named Craig, who I remember he went, you've never heard so-and-so?
Yeah.
And he started having me listen to some music. And granted, it's stuff like now where I'm just like, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But like, I remember he was like, what? Like, I first heard Du Hast by Rammstein with him. I heard Faith by Limp Bizkit.
Hey.
I first heard Rage Against the Machine. I first heard like all these kinds of different bands, like where he was like, "Hey, I'm gonna play this, like check this out." I'm gonna play different kinds of music,
right?
And I'd be like, "Oh, this is awesome!" And he had this on his computer, his PC. He had this whole huge library of music and this visualization tool. And I remember I would just play his music and just sit in his computer chair and just listen. And but it because that was how I got my freedom, because I was restricted from what I could listen to.
Right.
So then I listened to everything. And hearing the music and the different kinds there, and like understanding that music dealing with like self-discovery,
right,
that part resonated with me.
I think that like what we were talking about before, how none of these characters, I don't identify with any of these characters,
right?
But I feel like there is someone on campus that is me.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I have that. They build this universe that I'm like, I know that I'm somewhere on there.
Well,
do you know what I mean? Someone that I can identify.
Yeah. Well, when they're walking at one point, I remember Plummer says, like, who are these people?
Right.
And he goes, oh, well, you know, you can't know everybody. He goes, but no, like, who are they? He goes, here's people with suitcases and people with this and this.
Right.
He's like, they all have their own lives.
Right.
And he's kind of like almost has this moment where he's kind of like philosophical about like who we all are.
Right.
And, you know, how we relate to each other. And I was kind of like, yeah, all right, I get that.
Uh-huh.
It made it feel very big.
Uh-huh. Oh, so, yeah, very big.
Yeah. So I agree with you on the music aspect. Mm-hmm. Do you wish this was a real sequel?
At first, when we were watching it, I did.
Yeah.
And then slowly as the movie progressed and I realized what it was telling,
yeah.
what it was telling me, no, I don't.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I agree.
Because at first I was bored. I was like, yeah. why can't we just have a sequel?
Yeah.
But it's 10 years later.
It would have baggage and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me tell you though, like I'm watching it. Now I'm almost irritated that Linklater even said it was a spiritual sequel.
Not me.
I kind of don't want him to connect them. Like, sure, have it be like different eras that you talk about, but like by attaching that, then there's always this undercurrent
that stigma.
That it's going to be somehow
tied
to it.
It has to be like this.
Yeah. And I almost wish it was just you drop that and make it a standalone thing. And yeah. I don't know whether he was intending for this to be like a. Hey, here's we have Slacker, which is in the 90s.
Right.
You know.
Late 80s.
Yeah, everybody gets some in the early 80s, and then Dazed and Confused in the 70s. Like, I don't know if he was trying to do these different generational things, but, like, dude, if your only intention was to say, it's the spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused to get people to watch it, then that would be... I think a travesty. Like, this movie should be enjoyed for what it is.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Does this make you want to watch The Spiritual Predecessor?
This movie as itself doesn't make me want to watch it.
Yeah.
But I've only seen that movie once, and yeah. I kind of want to experience that a little bit more. I feel like people like that movie. I don't know why people like that. I get why people like it.
Yeah.
I don't prefer that movie as much as most people.
Honestly, so you probably needed to see it when you were younger.
I kind of did.
Because also, like, I look at Dazed and Confused a lot different now. Like, when we right. watched it together, I was like, Like, it didn't strike me the same way as right. it did when I watched it when I was younger.
And maybe that's why maybe this affects me a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I can see that.
Because I had a better experience in college than I had in high school. So maybe this is, you know.
Yeah. This one actually makes me want to watch Slacker, not Dazed and Confused.
Slacker? Why yeah. Slacker?
I don't know, because I think there's so many, you know, you get a lot of, they talk about, like, who are these people, and you see all these different types
oh, okay,
of folks.
I got, yeah.
Like, you see the punks, you see the country people, you
yeah.
see whatever. And to me, I'm like, wow, Slacker is just such a tapestry.
I tell you, there's a guy in Slacker, I think he's the bird guy, who is from Peru, where I went to school.
Oh, nice.
Where I went to college at. Yeah.
Nice. But yeah, it makes me want to watch that, because to me, I get more of the sense of, like, this is one aspect, and then Slacker opens that world up even bigger to tell the story of the people who weren't on screen in this movie.
Yeah.
There you go. Would you rather them continue the predecessor or continue the spiritual sequel if they were going to make sequels of things?
Neither. I don't think either of them I would continue. I don't know if that's a choice, but that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's our question.
Yeah, I think neither.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yeah.
I would almost rather
These
have...
These are time capsules in themselves.
Yes, that's...
So
that's...
there's no way that you should...
Agreed.
Even mess with that.
Agreed.
Like, even what you said about why should this be a spiritual sequel? I'm almost kind of agreeing with you on that.
Yeah.
If you're talking about that, then yeah, no. Don't do anything with these.
Yeah. I agree.
You know, don't make a TV show. Don't make any. This is.
Leave it alone.
It's not like.
It's a snapshot.
It's not like a Coen Brother movie where there's so much mythology that you can put into it and make something else out of it, like a Fargo series.
Yeah.
He's so time sensitive in his capsules that you just should have a slice of life for this and a slice of life for this and just leave it at that.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Time is, you know, we always talk about, like, the music being a character in the Linklater movies.
Very much
time is a character.
And a pinball machine. Yeah. No, I'm just joking.
But yeah, it's time is kind of a character. They play with time. We have different. He likes to change your perceptions of it. He likes
whether you're dreaming or not, or in conscious or subconscious.
Yeah,
that exactly. He plays with that too in other movies. In a waking life, he does.
Oh
that.
Yeah. And then, two words to sum up your experience.
College cornucopia, like just where it's just all these different types of archetypes and different types of people, but mm-hmm. not in a bitter way, and not in a he does all this with love,
yeah.
and he doesn't do it with hate. Do you know what I mean? He's not cynical about it. It's very much about love, for the time and for that. So I think I say college cornucopia.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's my two words.
There you go. I just said time capsule.
Yeah.
And because it really is. Like, when you think about his stuff, they're time capsules. Like, you
they
either,
really are. They like, could be one day or 10 years.
But, well, and like, the 10 years is a different thing. But he likes playing with, like, perception of time. You never really get the movies where you're like, I don't know how long this has been, or like, you know, where it carries on for an extended period.
Yeah.
Even Boyhood,
you know.
Yeah. It's kind of like a day in the life of like in that 10-year period.
In that 10, one day
every
year.
Yeah. In 12 years or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. And that's just him.
Yeah.
Like it's either, I mean, it very much is time.
Yes.
It's either I'm going to follow these two characters for a day, I'm going to follow this person who then follows this person, who then follows that person in time and in time, real time, which he doesn't slacker, or it's the experience, college experience of 3 days as opposed to the last day of school before summer starts.
As opposed to one day, you know, every... the before or the sunrise series or whatever.
Right.
Where it's...
Those are one days.
Yeah. Like one day, but it's how many, like 8 years in between each or 10 years?
Right. And each one is like, it's before sunset. It's before...
Yes. You know, but midnight. Also which relates to like where they are in their lives and their relationship.
I think, like the only movie besides, you know, Bad News Bears, which I don't want to talk about, that doesn't really deal with time that much, I guess, is School of Rock. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He doesn't really talk much about that. But that's more kind of a commercial success for him.
I agree.
So, we enjoyed this. I enjoyed this movie.
Yeah.
I think I enjoyed this more talking about it than, you know, necessarily watching it. It's a slow burn, so if you do want to watch it, it is on Hulu and Prime that you can stream.
I would challenge anybody who's watching this, like, if you are watching this just to see, like, a crazy college movie.
Yeah, it's not
you're
going to
miss out.
It's not Animal House.
I would challenge any of you who are watching this to think about it in relation to your own college experience and, like, think about how what kind of things you learned and what kind of experiences you have and how you lived, and think about, like, how that relates in the concept of this.
Right. I don't remember classes that much at college. I remember those other in-between moments.
Yeah.
But I think that's what he's trying to do. Where can people find us, Jeremy, as we are trucking through onto our year anniversary on The Deuce? Where can people find us?
So people can find us at thedeucepodcast.podbean.com.
You're kidding.
Nope. Stitcher, Google Play Music, iTunes.
Don't be ridiculous.
Don't be ridiculous. So they can find us there. Find us on Facebook. You can join our page. We put different fun things out there.
Oh.
Sometimes we'll have surveys, or we'll have like you can go and vote on choices for, you know, what we should watch. Also on Twitter at Deuce Podcast. So you can find us there. Tweet to us. Send us messages. We like try to respond on there and get back to everybody, and we'll have a lot of things that we're friends we help promote as well.
We're doing a special episode coming up.
We are doing episode next week.
Next week,
in honor of St. Patrick's
Day, starting a day early. Usually we drop on Sunday. We're going to do this on Saturday because Saturday is St. Patrick's Day.
Yes. We're going to do it in honor of St. Patrick's Day. We're going to release the episode. We're doing Leprechaun 2.
Whoa.
And it is featuring Court of the Cinema PsyOps podcast.
Yes.
We will also have his wife, Bev.
His lovely, darling wife. I love Bev.
Yes. And if you've ever heard any of the Cinema PsyOp podcasts where she fills in for Matt and they go on there together, it is wonderful. And so we wanted to bring them on. We are all big fans of St. Patty's Day. So we thought we would bring them on and share that moment with them. So
on that note, the sequel is king.